Hello, everyone. I'm happy to see you. Happy to be here. Happy to speak and listen when we get to that point. I was reminded recently about a famous quote from the French philosopher and mathematician Pascal from the 17th century. And it seems to me that, I don't know if it was at Joa's transmission week or when maybe Tanya's transmission week. In any case, this summer at some point, Geno Roshi mentioned this quote. So if any of you were present and heard it, then I don't remember what she said about it, but I remember she mentioned this quote, but it's a famous quote. In French, it's Dieu est une sphère infinie, dans le centre et partout, la circonférence nulle part. And in English, it is, God is an infinite sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. When Roshi mentioned it, does anyone who was at any of those retreats this summer remember Roshi talking about it? Joa, you do? Was it at Tanya's or what is it yours? Debbie, do you remember it, Debbie? Did you say? No, you don't. Okay, well, so the people who were at Joa's transmission week don't remember it, so it must have been during Tanya's week. I don't know why she talked about it, Roshi, but when she brought it up, I remembered it because when I was a university student in a French literature class, we read some of Pascal and this came up. And I remember at the time, and this was long before I practiced Zen, I didn't even know anything about Zen. You know, I was like 19 or 20 or something. I was just like blown away by this. And by Pascal in general. And so when Roshi mentioned it, I thought, wow, you know, why didn't I come back to this? You know, why didn't I think of Pascal when I started practicing? Because for me, this is, you know, you can just replace mu, you can replace God with mu, for example. Mu is an infinite sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. Or you could, you know, replace reality, the way. You know, we chant the Buddha way is unsurpassable. I was discussing that with someone today, and he was saying how he didn't understand that, and he thought it was kind of almost arrogant to say something like that. And I didn't give him the Pascal quote, but I said it's the way is, there is no, it's like the circumference is nowhere. Nothing is not the way. Everything is the way. So it can't be surpassed because there is nothing other than this. So, and I was thinking about this quote. For some reason it came up, I don't know how, but in relation to our current situation in the world today, and what do we do? I heard that the Dalai Lama said, compassion is the radicalism of our time. And so compassion can only be, compassion is an action, is a being in the world, is being in relation, grounded in this, the center is everywhere and the circumference is nowhere. It's grounded in that realization. And it's radical because compassion is not utilitarian. It doesn't have any market value. It brings no profit or gain or loss, no glory, no fame. And that's radical in our world today. It defies boundaries. So it does not recognize Russia and Ukraine. It does not recognize soldier and victim. This is radical. Truly, truly radical. And yet, when we experience that this infinite sphere, apparently before Pascal, so Pascal was 17th century, I think, long before him, there are recorded versions of this quote. Often, however, it's the universe. The universe is an infinite sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. So Pascal uses God the same. And because Pascal was a brilliant mathematician, he gave an explanation of it like, because all points are equidistant from the circumference that is nowhere, they're all the center, something like that. And if that were not the case, then there would be points that were not, if it was a defined circumference, then there would be points outside the circle and they would be far, they would not be the center because they were farther away from the circumference. So he, you know, did some sort of mathematical proof of this. But we don't really need mathematical proof, you know. We sit on our cushion and that's what we're experiencing. Or that's what we are, that's what sitting is about, actually, is awakening to this center and the boundlessness, the non-separation that we talk about all the time. At the same time, in this radical compassion, I say compassion doesn't recognize the soldier and the victim, doesn't recognize Russia and Ukraine, and yet it does. That's part of the discriminating faculties that can be practiced from this place of the center is everywhere. Because when we see the center is everywhere, we see everything as it is, and we can recognize then when that is endangered, when there is harm that arises, when that is not seen. Because we can see what it is when we experience what it is, we can also see what happens when it isn't experienced. And if we come from this place of realizing it, then we can know how to act with compassion. Having compassion for the soldier does not mean saying, oh, it's okay what the soldier is doing. It means recognizing the suffering of the soldier who's inflicting suffering on someone else, or the delusion that is required to inflict harm on someone else. That's another way of saying it. And often we don't act from that place. And we can understand that. You know, in France this week, as of Monday, they lifted all of the mask requirements and the vaccine pass and all of that. Except in the metro, in public transport, you have to wear a mask. And if you're at the hospital or a doctor's office or something. But otherwise, no masks. And you know, I think for a lot of people, it's just such a liberation to not have to wear a mask out there. You know, when you're, I'm not talking about at home, because you don't wear a mask at home, but when you're out in the world and you don't have to wear a mask anymore, I think it's such a liberation. I can feel it, you know. And then there's maybe losing some discriminating mind of maybe there's a situation when you should still wear it, you know. Or when it might be a good idea, or if you're fragile, or something like that. And can we act from a place that is not just about my, what I want, what I feel, what I prefer, something like that, and act with care. I know this is the real trendy word these days, care, in all different sectors, care. But true care, compassion, is the radicalization of our time. I agree with Dalai Lama on that. And I've always said, this practice of ours is radical. This is one of the most radical things you can do in our current world, is sit down on a cushion and do nothing. And that doesn't mean what it sounds like. Late afternoon, I was at the supermarket and there was a long line. And behind me, some people started talking to each other. They weren't together, but they just started chatting in the line together. And I wasn't really listening. And then at one point, I heard one of the guys say, oh yeah, it's a Buddhist thing. So I thought, I wonder what he's talking about, you know? So I started listening a little more closely, and he said, there's this place near Clermont-Ferrand in the center of France, which is actually where Pascal is from, these people, they do these retreats and they stay there for 3 years and 3 months and 3 days. And they don't, you know, I couldn't hear all what he was saying, but I heard him say that, so I knew what he was talking about, the Tibetan retreats. And the woman who was not with the two guys said, oh, well, I guess if that's your thing or something. And he said, no, but, you know, it's really, he said, I went there to film or something. So I imagine he works in the film industry, or he's a reporter or documentary or something. Yeah, I went and filmed it. And, you know, these people, they went in December 2019 and they're coming out in February 2023 and they don't even know that there's COVID. And the woman was, no, that's not possible, no. And he said, no, they don't have telephones, they don't have computers, they don't have anything, they have no information. Now, I don't know if that's true, that they don't know there's COVID, but it was interesting how he thought this was just the most incredible thing, and the woman didn't believe it. And so I could kind of hear how, like when I say it's radical to just sit down and do nothing, I can hear how if you don't know what that means, then that comes out in a completely different way. So I don't know what they imagine that those people do for 3 years. But actually what those people are doing for 3 years is grounding themselves in, deeply grounding themselves in the infinite sphere, whose center is everywhere and circumference nowhere. No, I'm not speaking from personal experience, having not done one of those retreats. At the same time, I know what the practice is about. And so I know that that's what the point is to become so grounded in that, that you can move more easily in the world with this radical compassion. Doesn't mean that you are always in contact with it, but you have a better chance if you've become grounded in it. And that's what our sitting is about too. Becoming grounded in this center is everywhere. And that includes you, but it's not limited to you. You are the center, but the center is everywhere. And what would happen if more of us experienced that? I haven't really heard so much. I did see something about a Buddhist community and a sangha in the Ukraine, but I can't really find much information about it. And in Russia, I don't know. But of course, they do have Buddhist practices. And I don't know what those people are doing, saying, what their practice is like. If they are taking up arms, if they are leaving, if they're going out and helping in other ways. I don't know. Has anyone else heard anything about Buddhists in Ukraine or Russia? No. I know the Zen peacemakers in Warsaw are very active, bringing refugees to Warsaw, giving them supplies, going to the border. But I don't know any other countries. And yet, what we all need to do is just ground ourselves in this center and the circumference nowhere. Because the wars start because we close the circle and we say something is not in the circle. And it's quite clear, you know, Vladimir Putin feels threatened because Ukraine wants to join another circle. And so there's a threat that if it's inside that circle, and that's even what's happening, right? NATO won't send arms because if they do, then their circle risks being attacked. Of course, these circles have utility in the world. So, you know, the famous story of you have to belong to a circle and have a passport to show for it so that you can go into other circles. You have to have this identity that you belong to this circle and this is who you are and your age and all of that. And then that allows you to go into another circle. actually that those circles are all just fictive. There is no circle. Or let's say there is a sphere, but it's has no, the circumference is nowhere. So it's like reality is boundless, we chant. It could be reality is an infinite sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. Which a realization of that then brings up just boundless love and compassion. There's no other possibility. When we realize that we are not different, it's a big relief, actually, to realize that we're not special. We think that it's a real danger and that, well, it'll be devastating to find out that we're not special, that we're not more special than others. And I'm speaking from experience, having had this realization that I was not something extraordinary. And yet, when we realize that, then we see that everyone is extraordinary. Everyone is just so beautifully unique. On Saturday night, Debbie happened to be at the same concert. We chose to go to the same concert, which was Dale's choir. Dale is a choir leader, and his international women's choir was performing. And, you know, it's like a manifestation of the center is everywhere. Each of these women were completely different, you know, and yet they were all dressed in black, but each one had their own black, whatever it was. And then according to which group in the choir they were in, they had a different color of jewelry. So some were red, some were turquoise, some were gold. But they were all different. You know, some had a red necklace, some had a small red pendant. It was just very different. Some were tall, some were short. Some had white hair, some had dark hair, just completely different. And each had a different voice. And yet they came together in this beautiful concert. And there's, of course, this is what every choir is. And yet there's something in it because of Dale's practice that comes through. Because of his Zen practice, it's different than another choir. And probably those women, they have no idea that he has a Zen practice. I don't know. Maybe they do, but maybe they don't. It's because he, I hope he doesn't mind that I'm speaking about him. I don't think he would. Do you think, Debbie, he would mind? I don't know. It's because it's coming from him, being grounded in the center is everywhere. And so he sees each of them as the center and cultivates the voices and cultivates the performance and the coming together in a very sweet, beautiful way. That's just an example how our practice, it does make a difference in the rest of the things we do in our life. It really does. We may not see it, but it doesn't matter if you see it. What matters is that it's there for others. Because you are there for others. And you don't have to go into a monastery for 3 years. we chant, you know, may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. The lotus can only function if there's mud. So we're in the mud here. We're deep in it, in our lives. You know, maybe we don't experience it as mud all the time, but, you know, it's pretty muddy. In the sense of, you know, we have to do things we don't necessarily want to do. We have to make our own food. In a monastery, somebody's making your food for you. We have to make our own supply, our finances, so that we can pay for our rent and our cars and our whatever. We have to have cars to go places. In a monastery, you don't need a car because you're not going anywhere. We have to buy clothes. In a monastery, you don't have to buy clothes because you're wearing the same thing all the time. People are telling you what to do. You have a very, you know, regimented schedule. Here we have to think about, well, what am I going to do tonight? Or where am I going to go this weekend? Or what am I going to do on my vacation? Or I have to go pick up my son. Or, you know, I can't go anywhere because of the pandemic. That's the mud. There's a war in Ukraine. That's the mud. It's where the lotus blossoms. And the mud is the center too. So anyone like to share anything? Say something? Questions? Comments? Joelle?
Good evening, everyone. Because you were talking about the situation in a monastery, I remember the and about the mud you were talking about. I remember the story I once heard. She's a Portuguese. She's a Tibetan in the Tibetan. She's a Buddhist nun in the Tibetan tradition. She's Portuguese, and she once was telling this story about, and she did the initially she did the 3 years retreat in France, I think. And so at a certain point, she needed to buy underwear, and because they cannot go out, they used like a catalog, and they would order. See, this was many, many years ago, so I guess there was no internet even then. So maybe using the posts, I don't know. So they had a catalog from which, you know, they could choose. And she needed to buy underwear. And then she would talk about how, even in that apparently, I don't know if protected is the right word, but there was mud even there, because she was telling about, you know, she went through like a mental hell for weeks and weeks deciding, because she could choose different kinds of things that the catalog had. And she said it was terrible. It was weeks and weeks. She was in terrible suffering because indecision. Should I buy this? Should I buy that? And so, mud. Even so, it's. And I remembered that story to share. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. You know, it's not because you're in a monastery that that everything is perfect and peaceful and no mud. It's just different mud, which has the same nature as all the rest of the mud. Krisha.
Hi, is my sound good? Okay. My usual problems. Computer one. It's about what you said in, I'm not as eloquent as you, but I will try, about the soldiers and the victims and it's not about giving reason to neither of them, the compassionate way. It's about to be there, I think, and understand that they suffer or illusion creates suffer to others. But keeping in a much simpler way, my life, conflict. And relationships where you have to be compassionate, but you also have to bring conflict in a grounded way to be faced, not to turn away your face or you won't be perhaps grounded in it or liberated from it. But trying to be more specific, what I feel, for an example, in with my children relationships, I have one daughter that really doesn't like to be vulnerable. If I say something, she will go away, get mad, nah, 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 nah. But I still have, to face the conflict because it's not just a relationship that I can say, okay, if you don't want, it's okay. Some I have an orientation role, and when I can be really compassionate about it, it's like, okay, she's not. Cooperating with me, but I say, I'm here. Come on and let me give you a big hug. And sometimes she melts. And it's okay, but this is difficult to with in other relationships. It's more difficult for me. When people aren't don't want to collaborate.
What do you mean by don't want to cooperate?
I don't want to be to face the conflict.
And so how does that manifest though? Do you have an example?
See if I can remember something. My mother. She refuses, or she had refused to recognize that I have needs as a daughter. And she would, imagine go to a trip and see monuments and stuff. But I'm a children. I can't go 10 hours walking, or I need to eat, to go to the bathroom. I don't have the capacity to take long hours. And she refuses to recognize it, because it's more important to her to bring me to monuments. And if I say to her, she will try to explain me why am I wrong. And there's nothing I can do. I can be compassionate about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can totally be compassionate about it. But for me, it's difficult to accept that there's not a space to solve this conflict.
No space to talk about the conflict?
Yeah, and solve it, you know?
I am, yeah. Well, we don't come to a relationship with radical compassion expecting some solution. And of course, in an intimate relationship like that with a parent, it's harder than it is with, although, you know, you are saying with yourself as a parent, you're able to function and with compassion with your child, whereas as the child, you're not able to do that with the mother. The point is not to bring about a change in the other. The point is to yourself come from that place of the sphere that's infinite and the center is here, is everywhere. So you can also see that your mother is the center too. And that doesn't change how she, what's happening for her, but it does change what's happening for you. And what's happening for you has an effect on what's happening for her. That's not why you're doing it. At the same time, and we don't know how it will affect her, but there will be an effect. We are all affecting each other. You know, I gave the example the other, I think it was with you, Krisha, wasn't it? When we were talking about the sandstorm, the Sahara.
Yes,
there is. You know, there's this sandstorm in the Sahara. And everything in Paris is covered with red ochre sand. And the cars, my garden furniture, everything's covered with it. It's someone, I was talking to someone today who's in Brittany on the west, northwest coast of France. Same thing there.
Here too.
Yeah, exactly. So we are affected by what's happening in the Sahara. And it's very clear. If we have an infinite number of situations like this, the pandemic is another one we're affected by. The disease is transmitted just like that, you know, and it shows our interconnection and our interdependence. The same thing is with your mother, although you don't see it or experience it in so directly as seeing the red sand from the Sahara. But you can feel how it's different for you when you come from that place. Doesn't mean that you don't want her to see what you need. And now you're an adult, so it's different too. But you can still feel what you feel and wish that she would recognize your needs, or that she had seen that when you were a child. And you can still hold those things and come from this place of the center, which gives rise to radical compassion. One does not eliminate the other. The radical compassion encompasses it all. Yeah, did you want to say, you were going to say something else?
No, that is totally true, and I feel it, and I see it. What I see, it's now I'm not expecting her to change, of course, or recognize, or I understand she can't, she doesn't even see. And when I'm with her, what I notice, it's there's space for us to be well with each other, you know? Because my angerness, it's softened, have softened it. There is a softened spot in our place in our today's reality, relationship. But, and that's totally true, and it's really good. But sometimes, and it's, but we are all in this world and we want also people to be better, not to act from places that creates suffering. And where I sometimes subside, it's when it's enough to ask for other person to be more up to it. I don't know. I settle for activism in meditation. Hoping that that space comes naturally, but you know, sometimes I have some doubts about how much compassion and how much you must tell a person how you really feel.
Sometimes it's compassionate to tell someone how you really feel. Sometimes it's not.
Thank you.
Freddie.
Pascal said too that what man needs, it's they don't know how to be still in a, how to stay still in a quiet room. He was a fervent advocate of staying still in a room. So.
Yeah, didn't he? Wasn't there something like that that he said the world would be completely changed if
men could stay still in a room?
Something like that.
So he was a fervent advocate of stillness, of cultivating stillness. And Thich Nhat Hanh said we should love our garbage, because with all the dirt of all these things, you can grow things, you can grow legume, you can grow plant. So we shouldn't be angry about our difficult things, because it's with all this that everything grows.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's, you know, our practice is about turning suffering into wisdom. It's organic. You know, it's like, say it's compost. Seo?
I don't know how to explain, but when you talk about this center in this circumference and this sphere, I remember when I was in this demonstration about the war, we were there together, many people, and it was for everybody a new situation. It was the first days from this war, and we were there, and someone cried something, someone sing something, and for me, it was in my head the thought. For me, it was okay to sing the international, and then I thought, but for the Ukraine, it's perhaps not okay that we sing the international, and it's like I feel with this circumference that I put this the center in other place to feel like other people, because we are also different. We have different feelings perhaps in our story, in our background. And I related what you said with this feeling that I had in this moment.
Right, the center is everywhere, and yet each center is different. It's true. Well, I think we can probably end there then, if no one has anything to add or ask. I encourage you to look into it, the center and the circumference that's nowhere. Maybe somebody can find a translation in Portuguese so that speaks to you differently, more heart. I'm sure Pascal is translated in Portuguese. No? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Shall we do the vows and the